Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Tim McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And so the show, we're talking about pit bonds. Well, the government has just announced a major change to the tenancy rules surrounding pit bonds and a couple of other things. So what's the story? Well, effectively, if you, as a property investor, want to allow somebody to have a pit, you can ask for a bit of extra money as part of the bond to cover your risk effectively. How much can you ask for, Andrew?
So at the moment, bonds normally 4 weeks or up to 4 weeks rent to cover the landlord for any damage. Now you can now, as a landlord, ask for an additional 2 weeks rent as bond to cover the pit. So say you got a $500 a week property, that means you can collect an extra $1,000 bond if your tenants want to have a pet. Now the landlord doesn't have to actually charge that. That's a personal decision. They might say, hey, you know what? I've allowed pets through this entire ownership period of this property, and I've never had any issues, I'm happy just to accept the normal 4 weeks. But it does allow there to be a decrease in risk for the landlord saying, okay, I haven't had pets in the past, I'm going to allow it now, so I'm going to collect the additional 2 weeks bond.
Now, I think it will probably allow a lot more property investors to say yes to pets, but it was quite amazing. Just before we hit record, Andrew, it really does start to increase the cost for tenants when they are moving into a property. So again, take the example of a $500 a week property. So you're talking about, you know, 4 weeks of that is $2,000. Then you've, on top of that, you've got move-in costs. Usually you pay 2 weeks in advance. That's another $1,000. And then if you've got a pet bond on top of that, that's another $1,000. If you're doing the full 2 weeks, it could be up to $4,000 move-in costs in order to go ahead and rent a $500 a week property.
Plus you rent in advance often.
No, I already included that. You weren't listening.
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
Leave that in, David. The people need to know. And how many tenants from your experience would have $4,000 sitting around in their accounts?
I don't think many. That's a lot of money. If you're renting a house for $500 a week, that's a lot of weeks worth of rent you've got to cough up at the start.
Now, we'll come back to that, but there are some other good things as well in what the government are announcing. Specifically, they plan to make some really important clarifications to the law. They are going to clarify the rules so that any damage that a pet does above kind of fair wear and tear, that is going to be the tenant's responsibility. Now, you might think, well, what changes there? If the pet causes damage, isn't that already the tenant's responsibility? The answer is no, not necessarily. So there was a really good case study we talked about probably about a year ago where I think there was a tenant who had a dog and then the dog had urinated inside. Now, the first time that the dog urinates inside, that's called accidental damage because it happened accidentally. Because it was accidental damage, that was the landlord's responsibility to fix. Now, if the dog keeps urinating inside, that then becomes intentional damage and so the tenant has to cover it. But this means that all sorts of damage that the pets do, whether it be a cat scratching the walls, dogs urinating on the carpet, that will all be the tenant's responsibility. And this decreases the risk then for the property investor, for the landlord. Now, there is a bit of a question about, well, how will the tenancy tribunal interpret this? Because sometimes the politicians will create a rule and then the tenancy tribunal will interpret it slightly differently. So one of my questions, Andrew, that I want to get your thoughts on is, well, what if the tenancy tribunal changes the boundaries of fair wear and tear? So imagine if the tenancy tribunal says, okay, you have allowed a cat to be within the premises. You would expect that a cat might piddle on the floor or might scratch a wall. That's actually fair wear and tear if you're going to allow a pet. What do you think about that?
I think that if you have a pet, you take the responsibility of any damage the pet does. I don't think there should be any of it considered as fair wear and tear, personally.
But what do you think? Well, I agree with you, but what do you think the tenancy tribunal's got to do? There's a difference between what we think as property investors should happen and what the tenancy tribunal actually does.
I think they'll be soft. I think they'll be soft on tenants because they'll say, oh, you know, it's a lot of money for a tenant to, you know, cover those things. And it tends to be that they side with the tenants more often than the landlords, in my experience.
So the pros for property investors are pretty obvious. Talk to us about the pros and cons as you see them for tenants.
Okay. So I think the first pro is that property investors are far more likely to let you have a pet. I actually know of a situation at the moment. I just jotted it down. One of my friends moved into a house and just before they moved into their house, they inherited a cat. and they'd already signed up for this rental property. The new landlord said, look, I'm sorry, you can't have a cat in here. And so now they've got to rehome this cat that they've just inherited and really loved.
And I remember I had a friend, Devon, who owned her own home. And I think for some reason it wasn't appropriate for her anymore. She wanted to move. I said, well, that's fine. Just go rent somewhere else. She said, no, I've got two pets. No property investor is going to take me. And actually, Andrew, I couldn't believe how many people have pets.
Yeah, this is quite surprising to me. So according to the government, it's estimated that around 64% of New Zealand households own at least one pet. 64%.
High, right?
It's basically two out of three.
Yeah, that well done. You understand percentages. That's handy for a financial advisor.
I wouldn't have thought it would be that high because obviously there'd be a lot of flatting situations. I would have thought you'd be unlikely to have a pet in a flatting situation, but obviously this is right. And 59% of people who don't have a pet would get one if they were able to have one.
I'm one of those miserable 41% of people who don't have pets and don't want one either.
Oh, yeah, you're a psychopath. In terms of the cons, so I think for a tenant, it's really hard to find that extra 2 weeks worth of rent. I wonder whether or not, so I was just thinking before as a landlord, maybe what I might do is take an additional week's rent, but I might only take 3 weeks worth of normal bond and 2 weeks of a pet bond so that there's more allocated to the pet in case the pet does damage, if there's more flexible rules around that.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting.
And, you know, you think about tenants who are probably, in a lot of cases, trying to save a deposit to buy their own house, having to shell out this extra money. And I guess that, you know, it is bond. It does get returned to you if it doesn't get used. It's still probably quite challenging to you know, if you are saving as much as you can or living paycheck to paycheck. But I think the key thing here is the risk gets handed to the tenant, which, you know, is probably a good thing if they want to have a pet, but also a bad thing if the pet causes more damage.
Yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is that this will hand a little bit more risk off to the tenants because any accidental damage the pet causes previously, that was the landlord's responsibility. Now it's going to be the tenant's responsibility. And we might all say, well, that probably makes sense and I agree with you, but that is a con for tenants because it puts them in a slightly worse position, even if that's warranted.
And I think one of the unintended consequences is that if you are like Ed, a psychopath that doesn't have pets or want pets, then you might find that now when you go to rent somewhere, it might be harder to find a property because now property investors might be more willing to accept tenants with pets, and so you're competing with a greater pool.
Yeah, somebody like me will probably face a little bit more competition as a rent investor who doesn't have pets. Honestly, anything that puts me down just makes you happy, isn't it? I think the Germans call that Schadenfreude, where you're happy at my misery. Now, the big question I've been thinking about is, well, will this actually make a difference? Will more property investors actually allow more pets? Now, to test this, I went to the collective hive mind of the New Zealand Herald comments section, and generally we have three categories of property investors. There are people like Andrew and I who let tenants have pets anyway. So the policy is actually going to have almost no impact on Andrew and me because we already said, yeah, let the tenant have a pet if they want. So Jan W said, well, we usually opt for pet owners anyway. They tend to look after the place better than people who choose to move around a lot. So we've always said people who have pets might stay for longer and therefore they're pretty good. So for Jan, Andrew and I, no behavioural change. We let people have pets anyway. Peter D said, I'm fortunate to have two houses that he rents out. He said that he always has allowed cats and dogs. No concerns as he considered them all suitable. So for some people, no change to their behaviour. But then there were some other people who are also not going to change their behaviour because they never let tenants have pets anyway, no matter what. So Peter W in the New Zealand Herald's comment section said, no thanks, had one average tenant with a bad dog. Never again, don't care about the pet bond unless it's 20K or more. Now, I think Peter W is exaggerating a wee bit much because 20K as a pet bond is absolutely ridiculous. He typed that furiously.
Did he use caps?
He must have been tapping away on his Samsung device as he was commenting there. But for some landlords, property investors, they're going to say, nah, the 2 weeks isn't enough. I'm still not going to allow pets. But then there are some people who this policy will have an impact on who could be persuaded. I saw Bouchard said, renting with pets is a biggie, so any practical solution's great work. Adrian J said this is a good policy. As a property investor, it's going to increase the likelihood of me accepting a tenant with a pet. Catherine D said, about time, I've rented to tenants with pets and for sure would rather someone with a dog than small children. I completely agree, Catherine. So it might change the behaviour for some landlords. Andrew, which camp do you fall into? Will you be letting more pets in?
I've never really had much of an issue with pets, so long as it's fit for purpose. Like, if you've got a cat or you've got a small dog and you want to rent a townhouse off me, fine, I don't care. If you've got a giant German shepherd or something like that and you want to rent a townhouse off me, unlikely that I'm going to accept that application.
Okay, so you've already let tenants have pets in the past. So let's say you've got a townhouse, somebody wants to move in with a cat. In the past, you would have said yes anyway. Are you going to charge that tenant the pet bond?
I think actually the full pet bond on top of the normal bond is probably going to limit the number of people that I get. So I would probably charge a week's worth, or I'd charge 2 weeks and then I'd reduce my normal bond.
Okay, so you'll charge a little bit, but not the full whack. And isn't that worse for tenants then? Because now they've got to cough up an extra week of rent, but you would have let them have a pet anyway. So is this really a good policy?
Yeah, well, that is the unintended consequence. I think that the bond can be eroded quite quickly, particularly if, you know, a tenant leaves and they're behind in rent, and sometimes you might do an adjustment out of the bond for that. 4 weeks and a little bit of damage and then some pet damage, that money could be gone quite quickly. So I do think it's probably a good policy, but it is going to affect tenants in a negative way from that respect.
But it's really important, and this illustrates such a good point, which is that you can have a good policy that also has some negative things about it, that not everything is going to be totally positive. Now, there was some really interesting commentary around, well, do I now have to allow pets?
So there was an interesting comment in the press release. The new legislation will require that tenants may only have a pet with the landlord's consent, who can withhold the consent on reasonable grounds. So this is an interesting part. So what does that mean then in terms of, okay, well, if I'm a landlord that doesn't want to allow pets, and then you have someone like my friend move in, and then they say, hey, you know what, we've actually got a cat and we want it. Well, what grounds are reasonable for me to say, no, I'm not going to allow that?
Yeah, the other big question that we just need to clarify is, can you only withhold consent on reasonable grounds, or can you withhold consent in any circumstance? So can I say no to pets in any circumstance, or does this force me to allow pets to come in? That's going to be the interesting question.
Yes.
Now, the Tenancy Tribunal previously have effectively been of the opinion, if you look at the case law, well, if a tenant moved in without a pet and you said no pets, and then they acquire a pet, in most cases, they could keep that pet.
That's right.
And a lot of the situations that we've seen. So when we get the legislation, when we get the final rules, we need to look at the wording to see what does it actually look like and can we still say no? So there was an interesting case where I remember there was some tenants moved in without a pet and they rescued a dog.
I remember this.
The dog had been living with them for a year or so before the landlord found out. Then the landlord said, no, you can't have pets. You signed an agreement that said no pets. The tenant went to the Tenancy Tribunal. Tribunal says, well, no, her son has now formed a bond with this pet. As long as it lives outside, they can keep it. And so that's where, even though you've signed a contract that says no pets, the Tenancy Tribunal will sometimes overturn that. Now, when we're thinking about that term reasonable grounds, if you had to say, what would your interpretation of reasonable grounds be to say, no, you can't have that specific pet?
I would say that then comes down to the type of dwelling that you live in. So if it was an apartment and someone wants to have a big dog, it would be pretty reasonable to say, no, that's not a suitable pet for that dwelling.
And let's say that you have tenants already that have pets. Can you charge the pet bond to them and get extra bond out of them if they've already moved in for your current tenants?
I don't think you could. But if the tenants agreed to it, if they said to you now, hey, I want to get a pet, and you said, yeah, okay, well, this new pet bond, I'll allow it on the basis you pay an extra 2 weeks' rent, probably that could be done. But I don't think you could force someone's hand.
Yeah, I've got some tenants and they've got two cats in their property. I mean, we haven't got the final rules, but I suspect I will not be able to go to them and
say, no, you've already agreed to it.
You've got two cats, cough up the extra pet bond. And I mean, I wouldn't do that anyway because it's not the right thing, but I don't think you'd be able to do that. Now, just in terms of timelines, this bill will be introduced in May this year, which is pretty quick. I would expect it to be in effect, so passed and the rules are now in play, probably by quarter three of this year, so somewhere between July to September, maybe as far out as December. And there will be a whole heap of other changes as well, things like being able to give 90 days notice of your tenants to vacate and those kinds of things. There's going to be a lot more about this, and we're going to keep you guys updated throughout this podcast. Right, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if there's something you want us to talk about on the show, let me know. Send me an email, ed@opuspartners.co.nz. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Tim McKnight.
And I'm Richard Nicholl.
We're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.